Starless Night, Chapter 15, Masks. Canterbury had never seen such creatures. They somewhat resembled gnomes, at least in stature, being about 3 feet tall, but they had no hair on their lumpy, ruddy heads, and their skin, in the starlight afforded her by the magical circlet, showed grayish. They were quite stout, nearly as muscular as dwarves, and judging from the fine tools they carried and the well-fitting metal armor they wore, they were, like dwarves, adept at mining and crafting. Drizzt had told Canterbury of the Svefnebli, the deep gnomes, and that is what she presumed she was looking upon. She couldn't be sure, though, and was afraid that this might be some offshoot of the evil Duergar, Grey Dwarfs. She crouched amid a cluster of tall, thin stalagmites in an area of many crisscrossing corridors. The deep gnomes, if that's what they were, had come down the opposite way and were now milling about one wide, flat section of corridor, talking among themselves and paying little heed to the stalagmite cluster 20 feet away. Canterbury was not sure of how she should proceed. If these were Svefnebli, and she was fairly sure of that, they could prove to be valuable allies, but how might she approach them? They certainly did not speak the same language, and probably were as unfamiliar with humans as she was with them. She decided that her best course would be simply to sit tight and let the creatures pass. Canterbury had never experienced the strangeness of infravision, though, and did not fully appreciate that, sitting among the cool stalagmites, her body temperature fully 30 degrees warmer than the stone, she was practically glowing to the Svefnebli's heat-sensing eyes. Even as the young woman crouched and waited, deep gnomes fanned out in the tunnels around her, trying to discern if this drow, for Canterbury still wore the magical mask, was alone or part of a larger band. A few minutes slipped by. Canterbury looked down to her hand, thinking that she felt something in the stone, a slight vibration, perhaps. The young woman continued to stare at her tingling hand curiously. She did not know that deep gnomes communicated in a method that was part telepathy and part psychokinesis, sending their thought patterns to each other through the stone, and that a sensitive hand could sense the vibrations. She did not know that the minute tingling was the confirmation from the deep gnome scouts that this drow crouching in the stalagmite cluster was indeed alone. One of the Svefnebli ahead suddenly burst into motion, chanting a few words that Canterbury did not understand, and hurling a rock her way. She dipped lower behind the stones for cover, and tried to decide whether to call out a surrender or take out her bow and try to frighten the creatures away. The stone bounced harmlessly short and shattered, its flecks spreading into a small area before the stalagmite cluster. Those flecks began to smoke and sizzle, and the ground began to tremble. Before Canterbury knew what was happening, the stones before her rose up like a gigantic bubble, then took on the shape of a giant 15-foot-tall humanoid, its girth practically filling the corridor. The creature had huge, rocky arms that could smash a building to pieces. Two of the front stalagmites had been caught up in the monster's formation and now served as dangerous spikes protruding from the front of the monster's massive chest. Down the passage, the deep gnomes let out battle cries, calls that echoed in corridors all about the frightened woman. Canterbury scrambled backward as a gigantic hand swooped in and took the top from one stalagmite. She dropped the onyx figurine and called frantically for Gwenhyber, all the while fitting an arrow to her bowstring. The earth elemental shifted forward, its bulky legs melding with, slipping right through, the stony stalagmites in its way. It moved again to grab the woman, but a silver streaking arrow ripped through its rocky face, blowing a clean crevice between the monster's eyes. The elemental straightened and reeled, then used its hand to push its halved head back into one piece. It looked back to the cluster and saw not the female drow, but a huge cat, tamping down its hind legs. Canterbury came out of the back of the cluster, thinking to flee, but found deep gnomes coming down every side passage. She ran along the main corridor, cutting from mound to mound for cover, not daring to glance back at Gwenhyber and the elemental. Then something hard banged against her shin, tripping her, and she sprawled headlong. She squirmed about to see another of the Svefnebli rising from behind one mound, a pickaxe still angled out as it had been placed to trip her. Canterbury pulled her bow around and shifted into a sitting position, but the weapon was batted away. She instinctively rolled to the side, but heard shuffling feet as three gnomes kept pace with her, heavy mauls lifting high to squash her. Gwenhyber snarled and soared, thinking to fly right past the behemoth and turn it about. The elemental was faster than the panther suspected, though, and a great rocky hand shot out, catching the cat in mid-flight and pulling it to its massive chest. Gwenhiver shrieked as a stalagmite spike dug into its shoulder, and the deep gnome, running up beside their champion, shrieked as well in glee that the drow and her unexpected ally were apparently soon to be finished. Amal descended toward Catterby's head. She snapped out her short sword and caught it at the joint between handle and head, deflecting it enough so that it banged loudly off the floor. The young woman scampered and parried, trying to get far enough from the gnomes to regain her footing, but they paced her, every which way, banging their mauls with shortened, measured strokes so that this fast, tiring dark elf had no opportunities for clear counterstrikes. The sight of the marvelous panther, soon to be fully impaled and crushed, brought victorious thrills to a handful of the trailing Svirfnebli, but brought only confusion to two others. Those two, Seldig and Pumkato by name, had played with such a panther as fledglings, and since Driz Duarden, the drow renegade they had played beside almost 30 years before, had just passed through Blingenstone, they felt the panther's appearance could not be coincidence.
"Gwenhiver?"
Seldig cried, and the panther roared in reply. The name, so perfectly spoken, struck Catterby profoundly, and made those three deep gnomes about her hesitate as well. Pumkato, who had summoned the elemental in the first place, called for the monster to hold steady, and Seldig quickly used his pickaxe to scale partway up the behemoth.
"Gwenhiver?"
he asked, just a few feet from the panther's face. The trapped cat's ears came up, and it put a plaintive look on the somewhat familiar gnome.
"Who is that?"
Pumkato demanded, pointing to Catterby. Though she did not understand any of the Svirfneblin's words, Catterby realized that she would never find a better opportunity. She dropped her sword to the stone, reached up with her free hand, and pulled off the magical mask, her features immediately reverting to those of a young human woman. The three deep gnomes near her cried out and fell back, regarding her with less than complimentary, sour expressions, as though her new appearance was quite ugly by their standards. Pumkato mustered the courage to shuffle over to her and stood right in front of her. He had known one name, Catterby realized, and she hoped that he would recognize another. She pointed to herself, then held out her arms open wide and pulled them in as if hugging someone.
"Driz Duarden?"
she asked. Pumkato's gray eyes widened, then he nodded, as though he should not have been surprised. Hiding his disgust at the human's appearance, the gnome extended one hand and helped Catterby to her feet. Catterby moved slowly, obviously, as she took out the figurine and dismissed Gwenhiver. Pumkato likewise sent his elemental back into the stone.
"Colson Shea Orb," Jarlaxle whispered, an arcane phrase rarely uttered in Menzoberranzan that roughly translated to "pull the legs off a spider." The seemingly plain wall before the mercenary reacted to the password. It shifted and twisted into a spiderweb, then rotated outward, its strands tucked together to leave a hole for the mercenary and his human escort to climb through. Even Jarlaxle, usually one step ahead of other drow, was somewhat surprised, pleasantly surprised, to find Triel Benray waiting for him in the small office beyond, the private chambers of Gromph Benray at Sorcerer, the school of magic in the Drow Academy. Jarlaxle had hoped that Gromph would be about to witness the return, but Triel was an even better witness. Intreri came in behind the mercenary and wisely stayed behind at the sight of volatile Triel. The assassin eyed the intriguing room, perpetually bathed in soft, glowing bluish light, as was most of the wizard's tower. Parchments lay everywhere, on the desk, on the three chairs, and on the floor. The walls were lined with shelves that held dozens of large, capped bottles and smaller hourglass-shaped containers, their tops off and with sealed packets lying next to them. 100 other curious items, too strange for the surface dweller to even guess as to what they might do, lay amid the jumble.
"You bring Kolnbluth to Sorcerer?"
Triel remarked, her thin eyebrows angling up in surprise. And Trerry took care to keep his gaze to the floor, though he managed a few peeks at the Benray daughter. He hadn't viewed Triel in so strong a light before, and he thought now that she was not so beautiful by drow standards. She was too short and too stocky in the shoulders for her very angular facial features. It struck the assassin as odd that Triel had risen so high among the ranks of drow, a race that treasured physical beauty,
Her station was testament to the Benray daughter's power, he decided. And Drury couldn't understand very much of the drow tongue, though he realized that Triel probably had just insulted him. Normally, the assassin responded to insults with weapons, but not here, not so far from his element, and not against this one. Jarlaxle had warned Entreri about Triel 100 times. She was looking for a reason to kill him. The vicious Benray daughter was always looking for a reason to kill any Coln Bluth, and quite a few drow as well.
"I bring him many places," Jarlaxle answered. "I did not think that your brother would be here to protest."
Triel looked about the room, to the fabulous desk of polished dwarf bones and the cushioned chair behind. There was no connecting rooms, no obvious hiding places, and no Grumph.
"Grumph must be here," Jarlaxle reasoned. "Else why would the matron mistress of Arach Tinilith be in this place? That is a violation of the rules, as I remember them, as serious a breach at least, as my bringing a non-drow to Sorcerer."
"Take care how you question the actions of Triel Benray," the short priestess replied.
"Asankyu," Jarlaxle answered with a sweeping bow. It was a somewhat ambiguous word that could mean either "as you wish" or "likewise."
"Why are you here?" Triel demanded.
"You knew I was coming," Jarlaxle stated.
"Of course," Triel said slyly. "I know many things, but I wish to hear your explanation for entering Sorcerer through private doors reserved for headmasters and into the private quarters of the city's archmage."
Jarlaxle reached into the folds of his black cloak and produced a strange spider mask, a magical item that had gotten him over House Benray's enchanted web fence. Triel's ruby eyes widened.
"I was instructed by your mother to return this to Grumph," the mercenary said, somewhat sourly.
"Here?" Triel balked. "The mask belongs at House Benray."
Jarlaxle couldn't hide a bit of a smile, and he looked to Entreri, secretly hoping that the assassin was getting some of this conversation.
"Grumph will retrieve it,"
Jarlaxle answered. He walked over to the dwarf bone desk, uttered a word under his breath, and quickly slipped the mask into a drawer, though Triel had begun to protest. She stalked over to the desk and eyed the closed drawer suspiciously. Obviously, Grumph would have trapped and warded it with a secret password.
"Open it,"
she instructed Jarlaxle.
"I will hold the mask for Grumph."
"I cannot," Jarlaxle lied. "The password changes with each use. I was given only one."
Jarlaxle knew that he was playing a dangerous game here, but Triel and Grumph rarely spoke to each other, and Grumph, especially in these days, with all the preparations going on in House Benray, rarely visited his office at Sorcerer. What Jarlaxle needed now was to be rid of the mask openly, so that it could not be tied to him in any way. That spider mask was the only item, spells included, in all of Menzoberranzan that could get someone past House Benray's magical fence, and if events took the turns that Jarlaxle suspected, that mask might soon be an important piece of property and evidence. Triel chanted softly and continued to stare at the closed drawer. She recognized the intricate patterns of magical energy, glyphs, and wards on the drawer, but they were woven too tightly for her to easily unravel. Her magic was among the strongest in Menzoberranzan, but Triel feared to try her hand against her brother's wizardly prowess. Dropping a threatening gaze at the cunning mercenary, she walked back across the room and stood near Entreri.
"Look at me,"
she said in the common tongue of the surface, which surprised the assassin, for very few drow in Menzoberranzan spoke the language. Entreri lifted his gaze to peer into Triel's intense eyes. He tried to keep his demeanor calm, tried to appear subjugated, broken in spirit. But Triel was too perceptive for such facades. She saw the strength in the assassin, smiled as though she approved of it.
"What do you know of all of this?" she asked.
"I know only what Jarlaxle tells me," Entreri replied, and he dropped the facade and stared hard at Triel.
If she wished a contest of wills, then the assassin, whom had survived and thrived on the most dangerous streets of Fair Run Surface,
would not back down. Triel matched the unblinking stare for a long while and became convinced that she would garner little of use from this skilled adversary.
"Be gone from here," she said to Jarlaxle,
still using the surface tongue. Jarlaxle rushed past the Ben Ray daughter and scooped up Entreri in his wake.
"Quickly," the mercenary remarked. "We should be long out of Sorcerer before Triel tries that drawer."
With that, they were through the spidery door, which fast reverted to a plain wall behind them, blocking Triel's inevitable curses. But the Ben Ray daughter was not as mad as she was intrigued. She recognized three courses coming together here, her own and her mother's, and now, apparently, Jarlaxle's. The mercenary was up to something she knew, something that obviously included Artemis and Treri. When they were safely away from Tiabrek and the Academy, Jarlaxle translated all that had transpired to Entreri.
"You did not tell her of Drizzt's impending arrival," the assassin remarked.
He had thought that important bit of information to be the gist of Jarlaxle's brief conversation with Triel, but the mercenary said nothing about it now.
"Triel has her own ways of discerning information," Jarlaxle replied. "I do not wish to make her work easier, not without a clear and agreed-upon profit."
Entreri smiled, then bit his lower lip, digesting the mercenary's words. "There is always so much going on in this infernal city," the assassin mused. It was no wonder that Jarlaxle enjoyed the place so. Entreri almost wished that he was a drow, that he could carve out a place such as Jarlaxle had done, playing on the edge of disaster. Almost.
"When did Matron Ben Ray instruct you to return the mask?"
the assassin asked. He and Jarlaxle had been out of Menzoberranzan for some time, had gone into the outer caverns to meet with a Svirfneblin informant. They had returned only a short time before their trip to Sorcerer, and Jarlaxle, as far as Entreri knew, hadn't gone anywhere near House Ben Ray.
"Some time ago," Jarlaxle replied.
"To bring it to the Academy?"
Entreri pressed. It seemed out of place to him, and why had Jarlaxle taken him along? He had never been invited to that high place before, had even been refused on one occasion, when he had asked to accompany Jarlaxle to melee match there, the School of Fighters. The mercenary had explained that taking a Kolmbluth, a non-drow, there would be risky, but now, for some reason, Jarlaxle had thought it appropriate to take Entreri to Sorcerer, by far the more dangerous school.
"She did not specify where the mask was to be returned," Jarlaxle admitted.
Entreri did not respond, though he realized the truth of that answer. The spider mask was a prized possession of the Ben Ray clan, a potential weak spot in its hardened defenses. It belonged in the secure quarters of House Ben Ray and nowhere else.
"Foolish Triel," Jarlaxle remarked offhandedly.
"The same word, asancul, would get her into that drawer. She should know that her brother was arrogant enough to believe that none would ever try to steal from him, and so he would not spend too much time with password tricks."
The mercenary laughed, and Entreri followed suit, though he was more intrigued than amused. Jarlaxle rarely did or said anything without purpose, and the mercenary had told him all of this for a reason. But why?